Welcome to the Ventura Center for Spiritual Living Sunday service. I'm Reverend Bonnie Rose. It is a delight to be here with you this morning. Let's go ahead and just jump right in, and I'll pass the word over to Lonnie, our board president.
Morning, everyone. Welcome. Well, I don't know about you, but I'm pretty excited about this talk title.
You are?
I am. Okay. Pray Against Prey?
Well, it's sort of like that. I think it's like Fall that? Prey or...
Fall Prey?
Yes.
Or Prey?
I don't know.
Gosh. Maybe we don't always remember to pray.
That could be it.
So I just hope you settle in this morning. We've got a wonderful service planned for you. Hugh doing our amazing reading. I know he's really going to inspire us with that. And our beautiful Mary Kerrigan praying us in. And yeah, Bonnie, I heard you had a great talk.
Okay.
Title.
We'll
and the choir is showing up.
Yes, yes.
Virtually, of course.
The choir. And did you know that we have a soloist as well who is a relative of David Kerrigan? And he's an actor and performer, film and television. And stage from New York, and he's doing a virtual performance for us, Bill Yeomans. So, looking forward to that.
Lots of good stuff.
Yeah.
Settle in and welcome.
Yeah, thank you. All right, so actually, we don't have a children's message today, but in honor of our children that are sitting at home doing something, and in honor of the child of all of in all of us, let's just go ahead and turn within and place our hands over our hearts and just visualize a day when the stage was filled with children and Heron House was filled with children, and how it was that and how it will be that again. And then please repeat after me. We love you. We bless you. We believe in you. You are the face of God. And so it is. Thank you. All right. And here comes Mary Kerrigan, looking very Irish today. She'll pray us in.
Good morning. Will the practitioners and reverends here in the sanctuary and virtually wherever you are stand and support this prayer? God is present in all things, everywhere and everyone. That God of compassion and kindness, the God of love, the God of fun and play, the God of serenity. It's all here, available in me, expressing through me, and all here for everyone, because we are all connected to this God presence. Everyone here in this sanctuary and in our virtual spiritual community and throughout the universe. This message of love and hope, of peace and prayer, we take in today. We make it touch our hearts. We make it our own so we can take it out into the world throughout the week. So we are grateful for the message, for the music, for all the ways that we are inspired, all the ways that this service serves us and brings forth the very best in each and every one of us, in love, compassion, kindness. So with a grateful heart, I say thank you, God. Thank you for today. Thank you for this time together. And I release my words into the law, knowing that they are already so. And together we say, and so it is.
Thank you, Mary. And so it is, and so we allow it to be as we breathe in deeply and allow ourselves to become fully present here in this moment, whether we're at home, whether we're watching someplace else, whether we're watching later, whether we're here present in the sanctuary. Let us breathe in deeply and settle into our knowing of being. And as we do, breathing in and out, we open our hearts and our minds, our ears and our being, to hear the words of our sacred reading.
So Much That Is Right by Prem Rawat. The next time you see a tree, Observe and take note of this if you can. That tree represents so much that was right, so much that is right. Somewhere a seed fell to the ground, and that seed was right. It was good. It carried within it that marvelous potential. And then it was the right season, and that season allowed the potential of the seed to manifest. Then there was the right amount of water. Too much water, and it is entirely possible that the seed would have been swept away. But it was the right amount of water, with the right amount of velocity. And the soil that it fell on was also right. And so that seed germinated. It could have fallen prey to some little animal looking for food, but it didn't. A deadly frost could have killed that little plant off, but it didn't. And the season changed. Each one of them was kind enough to allow the manifestation of this potential. So it could happen. It could take place. And so it continued. Maybe a fire came, but it wasn't severe enough to kill the little plant. And the drought or floods, as they came, they weren't severe enough to kill it either. And the seasons came, and somehow the manifestation of this potential continued and continued and continued. And when you look at some trees, you're not talking about minutes or even a few years. This continued for hundreds of years. And here it is. You look at that tree and you say, something worked. And as you look at that tree, see not only the tree, but your own self in the same light. Realize the success this existence is. It is not a concept or a draft. It's real.
Yes, it is real that something worked. Something is working all the time, working through us, working as us, working for us. And so we breathe into the goodness of that, allowing it to be, allowing it to fill our hearts, knowing the sacred blessedness of life. And as we do, we become filled with the grace of spirit that has actually never, ever left us. We allow ourselves to be fully immersed and embodied by that grace. And then we breathe in deeply once again and exhale, opening our eyes in love and in service to what is as it is and so it is. Namaste. That's lovely. Thank you. Thank you to Bill Humans, who did the song for us. And I'm not sure who did the slides. Was it one of you? Oh, beautiful job, Mary. Thank you. And David. Thank you. And Brian. Okay, and Brian. And was that really Chris playing the piano? Yeah, I didn't think so, because I've never seen those buttons on you. Yeah, it was they were white. You don't wear white, please. Not even a white button. Yeah. Oh, goodness. You know, before we start, I sometimes forget to do this, but I did want to mention that we're dedicating the flowers today to a beautiful couple that has graced our church for so many years, and we're just giving them to them because we love them, and that would be Annie and Bill Kohut. The flowers are for you, people. Yay. Okay, so Lonnie made a point of saying that my talk title was... Was it bizarre, interesting, I'm not sure what. And basically the gist of it is fall prey, P-R-E-Y, or fall prey, P-R-A-Y. Now, let us ponder what that means, and perhaps I'll know what it means by the time that I'm done speaking. So I want to jump back to last week a little bit, where I spoke about how... There's seepage into our consciousness. You know, the world is always seeping into our consciousness. Race consciousness is. And when after the service last week, I listened to it, and I hardly ever listen to my talks. But there was something that I wanted to check out. And in the service, I had given Alexa a command. I had asked her to play songs by Ethel Merman, and then Ethel Merman, because that's how she says Ethel Merman. And when I listened to it, I said it three times. Three times it set off my Alexa at home. And I recognized, as I made a little joke about it in the service, that I was probably setting off Alexas all over Ventura County. And I was. In the comments, people were saying, now my Alexa's playing Ethel Merman. Thanks a lot. Do you know how powerful that makes me feel? Do you know, have any idea what I'm tempted to do right now? I would do it, but I can't decide between the Lord's Prayer and Uptown Funk. So, oh, I gotta do it. Alexa, play Uptown Funk. I apologize. Anyway. You know, and it does give you a feel of power, and it's such a great metaphor for what we talk about in the science of mind. You know, one of the things that we say is that there is this law of mind that responds to the impress of our thoughts. And you know, this law of mind never stops listening. When we're talking to ourselves about loss or lack or disease, that law of mind is always listening and always saying, yes, I guess that's your reality right now. You know, the thing, too, that I've noticed about Alexa, I guess I'm obsessed with Alexa. She's like my new girlfriend or something. I don't know. But Alexa is always listening, too. And that's why some people don't really want to have her in their home. And I know this because I used a word a couple of months ago that I've never used. I didn't even know what it was till I looked it up. And it's a word I can actually say in church. It was the word crepuscular. Does anybody know what crepuscular means? Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, crepuscular is, I was looking up whether rabbits are nocturnal or diurnal, and rabbits are crepuscular, meaning that they are active at dusk and dawn. They're active at dusk and dawn. This was important to me for various reasons that I won't go into. But anyway, I used the word crepuscular in front of Hugh. I mentioned to Hugh that rabbits are crepuscular. And I said it once. And the next day, I asked Alexa to give me a trivia question. And she asked me a question. And the answer was crepuscular. She is spying on you, people. But so is the law of mind, actually. So, you know, we could be used to it by now. Like Alexa, the law of mind is always listening. Like Alexa and Siri, if you don't have Alexa, like Alexa, the law of mind takes an image or a thought that we put into words and gives us something that we perceive with our senses. Like Alexa, the law of mind is something that is like a mirror. Ernest Holmes says that life is a mirror. Life is a mirror, and the thinker projects his thoughts into the mirror, and then those thoughts reflect back to the thinker. So that is going on constantly. A really simple way to say this is the way that I often say it, is that the quality of our thoughts affect the quality of our experience. The quality of our thoughts affect the quality of our experience. Now, truly, there is something greater than that. Grace is greater than the law of mind. Grace is greater than Alexa. But in general, the quality of our thoughts affects the quality of our experience. If we're thinking about lack, if we're thinking about failure, we will perceive failure and lack if it's not even there. If we're thinking about abundance, if we're thinking about grace, we will perceive the truth of abundance and grace in everything, even in the things that the world does not define as abundant and grace. The quality of our thoughts affects the quality of our experience here on the planet Earth. Now, the thing is that the quality of our thoughts, will we allow them to feel like they are against us, or will we allow the law of mind to feel like it is against us, or will we allow it to feel like it is for us? Will we be a victim from the quality of our thoughts, or will we be a victor with the quality of our thoughts? And that's the meaning of will we fall prey, P-R-E-Y, will we be a victim? Will we feel like our thoughts are against us or the world is against us? Our perception of the world is against us, especially when we don't know it's a perception. Will we feel prey? Will we fall prey or will we fall prey, P-R-A-Y, which is contemplating the facts from the highest point of view, from the spiritual point of view. It seems to me like at every moment we have a choice. Now, the idea of falling prey, P-R-E-Y, feeling like our thoughts are against us, what is up with that? I wish I could remember, but I can't, so I'm going to look at my notes. Oh, yes, okay. So the thing about thoughts, you know, there's some debate. Like, I think in old time metaphysics, we always talk about my thought, our thought. You know, then there's this collective thought thing. But the thing about thoughts that I read from more modern metaphysical teachers is that we don't our thoughts don't really belong to us. They don't really belong to the true self. They are like leaves floating down a river. And sometimes we will glom onto a leaf and say, this is mine. You know, if a leaf is a thought, we'll glom onto that thought and say, this is mine. And what often happens because of the way that our brains are made is that we often glom onto the really scary leaves because we feel like it will protect us if we know what's there to scare us and that what has the potential to uproot our life. And what happens when we do that is that we don't realize that these thoughts don't necessarily belong to us. They are just thoughts floating around in the ether, in the atmosphere, in the ocean of consciousness, in the river of life. But we treat them as if they are mandatory, that we're thinking it, so it must be mandatory. There is no other thought that I could possibly have about this. We treat them as if they are true. This must be true because I'm thinking it. We don't recognize that it's merely our perception. And because we think that they are mandatory, true, and ours, we think that they cannot possibly be changed. When the truth is that any thought can be changed. We've probably even had examples of that where we were proven wrong, where a thought that we thought was true was actually changed. Any thought can be changed with a little bit of consciousness and mindfulness and joyful work. So one of the ways to examine our thoughts is to look into the principles of duality. You know, when we're talking about duality, that's like a sense of two-ness, a feeling that there are two equal powers versus one equal power. And in duality, we tend to move into a place where we act from the dualistic mind. The dualistic mind sorts and it separates and it has this either-or thinking that doesn't always serve the greater reality of the absolute. Either or thinking is when we look at our lives and we say, this is either good or it's bad. It can't be both. This is either darkness or it is light. This is either joy or this is sorrow. You know, and when we're stuck in darkness, when we're stuck in sorrow, when we're stuck in bad, we see no potential for anything else when we're stuck there. We fail to see the gift that's in those qualities over here where we can't see, where we're stuck in this perception of duality when we're in either or thinking, whereas the non-dual mind is much more about yes and. The non-dual mind sees that within every piece of adversity there is a gift. The non-dual mind says that yes and, yes, this is both darkness and light, but they need each other. The darkness needs the light, and the light needs the darkness. And joy and sorrow are also intermingled. That joy and sorrow are in beautiful expressions of the same thing, which is love. And that impermanence and permanence are also intertwined. Impermanence causes us to recognize that life is sacred. And yet there is this permanence, this underlying thread beyond all life that is part of the source of that which makes life sacred. So you see what I mean by that? That when we're stuck in dualistic mind, we are sorting, we are categorizing, we are separating, and we are engaging in what we might call black and white thinking, dark and light thinking, where we are saying, this is bad, but this is good. And how badly, when we're in this is bad thing, how unreachable this is good place, this is good place is from us. But really, it's all just a beautiful swirl of intermingling. Now, you know, I think about how we do this. This is all sort of heady and esoteric, but if I bring it down into my heart and look at ways that we engage in this dualistic thinking, I think about how many times in my life, and perhaps in yours, in myself, I've observed a great skill at the ability to turn abundance into scarcity. You know, I don't do this so much anymore, but back in the day when I was first starting to teach here, I would write a class and I'd put out the flyers and the posters and I'd be like, oh man, nobody's going to sign up. I don't know anything. Nobody's going to sign up. It's going to be a failure. Might as well just, you know, hang up my minister pin and go someplace else. I don't even think I have a minister pin. I don't know why I said that. And then people would start signing up. And then after a while, a lot of people would start signing up. And that could have felt like abundance, but it felt like, oh man, people are signing up. I'm going to have to come up with something. That is a great example of turning abundance into scarcity, right? And we all do, you know, I think probably everybody, even if you're not a teacher in a church, probably that happens all the time. I don't know if any of you have had babies or puppies, even cats, babies, okay. I'm not going to do a show of hands. We don't need to know who's had babies or puppies. But something that you really want, something that's exciting, even if it's a great job that you've been praying for and you're so excited about getting it, and it seems like such a good thing. It seems like, boy, if I have this, I'll be happy. I will be abundant. I'll be wonderful. And I've never had a baby. I've had great jobs. But I certainly know the experience of having a puppy where you are so excited and it's going to be this true symbol of abundant love for you. And then you get the puppy home and it's chewing up everything in the house and it's pooping and it's doing what puppies do, and it won't leave you alone, and it's got puppy bites, and you're like, oh my God, what was I thinking? What was I thinking? I want to bring this thing back. It's ruining my life. That's turning scarcity into abundance. And I suspect, I've never been a parent, but I suspect that it's the same thing for parenting. You have this baby, this little bundle of joy, and you bring it home, and you're so excited, and then you're like, I don't know what to do. It's crying, whatever, it's pooping. Same as puppies, but probably a little harder with babies. But anyway, it's that kind of thing. So you know, sniff around your life and see if there's anything in your life that is feeling really scarce. That's the point of this. If there's anything in your life that's scarce, maybe you are turning abundance into scarcity. And the abundance is the truth. The scarcity is the falsehood. Maybe the scarcity is just a matter of your perception. See if you can just see it. You don't have to fix it. Just see it. See where you may be turning abundance into scarcity, and just see it and open up to a greater possibility that something wonderful is waiting to be born in this perception, in this old perception, giving birth to the new perception. The other thing that I've observed happening in terms of, you know, dualistic thinking and non-dual thinking is that I've observed that it's really easy to turn privilege into prison. And what I mean by that is, I don't know if any of you have been in a relationship or have been married or what have you, and I'm thinking about a couple now. Let's call them Connie and Hugh, and Lou, sorry. Reverend Connie and Lou. And I've told you this before, for years I used to get tweaked by dirty dishes in the sink. And we just have a different perception of how quickly dishes should be washed. I like to wash them before I eat, when the food's barely out of them, and I like to wash them. And Hugh has a different perception, and I used to take it personally. And in the last couple of years, I know that's so weird. I used to take it personally because somebody thinks differently than me. That's write that down. That's not a good thing to do. It's what we do all the time. But you know, in the last couple of years, just because recognizing that life is precious, I'm like, what if washing dishes could be a labor of love? Because I actually love washing dishes, and I love restoring order, and I love putting things away, and I like cleaning, and I like meditating while I wash dishes. So what if this could just be a privilege, a labor of love for somebody that I love deeply? So that has changed a lot in me, and it's also, when you make a little change like that, it's surprising at how that shifts your consciousness in so many other ways. You know, if Hugh were up here talking, if he wanted to complain about me, he'd probably have a lot to say. Or Lou. He'd probably have a lot to say about Connie. But, you know, I would imagine that one of his complaints about me is that I tend to totally ignore the garden. And I don't do any work in the garden. And when he used to travel a lot and I used to water, there was a little spate of dead plants because I'm not a good waterer. I'd be like, whatever, you're done. I don't care. And yet now I look at the garden, I just appreciate all of the work that goes into it, all of the beauty, all of the love, all of the fact that he can stand and stare at a rose for 20 minutes and then come and tell me how beautiful it is, that he notices little blooms coming out of cacti. I didn't know about cacti before I moved to California with him. You know, I didn't know that they flowered even. So turning imprisonment, which is, by the way, only in our own minds, imprisonment into privilege changes everything. It changes your perception at large. It changes, it's not only the thing that you're doing, the thing that you're trying to shift, but it ripples out and starts to change your perception of everything. You know, and I also think about that in terms of the pandemic. Perhaps some of us have felt imprisoned by this pandemic, that there has been social isolation, and that we're not allowed to do what we need to do, and we're not allowed to go where we need to go, and we're not allowed to gather, and we're not allowed to socialize the way that we want to. But what if our being born in this time is actually a privilege, and that the ramifications of that privilege are still being revealed? We just don't know what they are yet, but we're not going to know what they are if we continue to think of this as imprisonment. If we start to look back on the pandemic and how inconvenient and distressing it was, but start to tell ourselves, you know, this was a privilege. This was a privilege for humanity. And I get to participate in the evolution that is supposed to come through this time that we've spent in isolation. I hope that doesn't sound harsh to anybody, me calling it a privilege for humanity, because so many lives were lost. But you know, in this book that I'm reading of Juliana Norwich, she's always saying that woe and well are mixed. I would say woe and wonder are mixed. And yes, it was a tragedy, but it was also something else. It is also something else. So if we start to embody the consciousness of I am privileged to be here, it is a privilege to serve during this pandemic. It is a privilege to reinvent the center, because who knows what's going to happen when we open up. It is a privilege to allow something greater than us to move through our lives and make them even better than they were before, to move through our center and make it something even better than it was before, to move through our community, to move through our world, to make it even something better than before. We are the people that were called to this time to do that. We are privileged. What a privilege it is to serve at this time of pandemic. So there's that. There's moving into dualistic thinking. There's one more thing I want to say about how we sometimes fall prey, P-R-E-Y, to thoughts or the thinking of the world or the misuse of the law of mind in destructive and negative ways. We sometimes fall prey by attacking ourselves for falling prey. We are so messed up. We are so messed up. And I mean that in the kindest possible way. By messed up, I mean dear. Remember what hard from last week meant? Anybody? Joyful. Hard means joyful, and messed up means dear, endearing. Just so sweet and clueless. You know, like I said, I've been reading this book about Julian of Norwich, who was a Catholic saint. She was an anchoress who lived off a little church in this little room, and she looked out the window and she gave people advice. I'm down for that, by the way. I could do that. Because you know what else? She had a cat. She's often pictured with a cat. And I'm like, what's with the cat? It was because she had rats. And guess what? It was during the time of the bubonic plague, so a cat was very important at that time, right? So anyway, enough about Julian of Norwich's cat. What was I about to say? Who knows? Oh, yes. In the book, they were talking about how during the plague, when people were responding to it, one of the things that they would do was mortify the flesh. What a coincidence that I was just talking about mortifying the flesh a couple of weeks ago. A song from a Broadway musical. Like I said, it was, what did I say it was? Mary Poppins. No, it's not really Mary Poppins, it's Sweeney Todd, where you beat yourself for having sinful thoughts. During the plague, people would beat themselves. They would mortify the flesh, because they thought that their sinfulness had caused the plague. You see what I mean? What a mess. I mean, it's like, you know, hate can't drive out hatred. Sinfulness, separation from God, cannot drive out sinfulness, right? If you are beating your flesh and saying, I caused the plague, that is great evidence of separation from God, and that will never get you to where you want to be, which is connection to the wholeness and the beingness of truth, of love, and of grace. You know, you may want to take a minute and think how you might be mortifying yourself, how you might be blaming yourself for some of the bad things that are happening in your life. You know, one of the things that I look at a lot is addiction, because as you know, I'm a sugar addict, and a couple weeks ago, I fell off the wagon. Not only did I fall off the wagon, it ran me over. Then it backed up and ran me over again. Back on track now, but, you know, we'll see. But, you know, the thing, I get mortifying the flesh because of that. Because, you know, you eat something that you shouldn't eat. You drink something that you shouldn't drink. You ingest a drug that is probably not good for you. And you feel badly. And you feel guilty. So what do to make yourself feel better? You ingest again. Right? It doesn't work. And that is the principle with mortifying the flesh. And that is the principle with, if you are doing something to shame yourself, to add that layer of shame to something that you've done that separates you from God, that is just the mental equivalent of mortifying the flesh. It is actually attempting to mortify that which can never be mortified, which is a spirit. But while you're shaming yourself, the shame feels very real. So we let that go. We let it go. We see it. But we see it with compassion. If we've done something wrong, if we've done something that does not serve ourselves or humanity, you know, I often think of it as like cleaning a window. if we're falling prey to our thoughts that are giving us trouble, it's like cleaning a window. In my car, in the windows, the bay windows in the front of my house, we have a lot of puppy slobber, right? And I love that puppy slobber. I love it. Because, again, it's that dearness of being. It's that dearness of this dog that's just trying to see out the window and bark at the other dogs and tell them who's boss. And when I clean it, which I will, in 1922 or so, I won't do it with any amount of drama. I'll just clean the puppy slobber. And that's, you know, when we've done something that we're ashamed of, when we're thinking incorrectly, when we're thinking dualistically, even if we're mortifying ourselves in some way, what if we just visualize it as something like puppy slobber? That may not work for you, I realize, but something that just needs to be cleaned, smudges, fingerprints on a window, and then just clean it away without a lot of drama. And I once saw through a glass through puppy slobber. Now we see clearly, face to face. I am quoting St. Paul there. Puppy slobber did not make it into the translation, however. And that's the point, is to clear things so that we can see face to face. So that we can see face to face. And here's where we get to the part about praying. To fall prey. Oh, wonderful idea, to fall prey. You know, and in this denomination, because we believe God is within, we don't necessarily fall to our knees and pray. But I'm a big fan of falling to your knees. I've been to India twice, and they get on their knees all the time. They put their heads on the ground, and there is something beautiful about falling down below your normal stature, because it leaves the ego up here, and you're in a much more humble position. You know, particularly putting your head on the ground is that your head is below the level of your heart, and the supremacy of the heart takes over. The head is important, but the heart and the head need to blend together. And so when we fall prey, we contemplate the facts from the highest point of view. We contemplate the facts from the highest point of view. You know, in that poem that Hugh read, when we look at our lives and we're so tempted to look at everything that has gone wrong in our lives and blame ourselves for it, but we rarely look at everything that has gone right in our lives. And, you know, I remember visiting people in the hospital and they're talking about where they're in pain, and I will say, okay, but what's going right in your body? Just think about something that's going right in your body. Is there a place in your body that doesn't hurt? One person once said, my nose. I'm like, okay, just meditate on your nose for a while. And she did, and she fell asleep, and she was relaxed. So that's the thing. It's shifting our consciousness. It's being open to seeing the woe, being open to seeing the darkness, but also understanding that the darkness and the woe is not the whole picture. Surrounding all of it is wonder. Woe and darkness is part of life and wonder. Julian of Norwich asks us to greet the world with a sense of goodness, that all is well. She says that all is well. And to understand that God is goodness itself, and to manifest that in our lives, to approach life with a sense of awe and wonder and joy. And so another great question to fall prey, P-R-A-Y, that you might have, you don't necessarily formally have to get on your knees, but you can metaphorically get on your knees, internally get on your knees, by expressing and experiencing a sense of wonder. Like, what brings you wonder? What brings you awe? What brings you a sense of joy? You know, certainly I've already described for Lou over there that it's his garden, that he loves to be in the garden because it brings him awe and wonder and joy. Or looking at the ocean, or petting an animal, or being with your children, watching your children play, or just being in this beautiful center, art, architecture, music, whatever brings you this sense of awe and wonder, let us not take that for granted. Let us know that that is our connection to the wellness of God, to the concept that all is well. And if there is art in the world, if there is music in the world, if there are animals in the world, if there are children in the world, if there are flowers in the world and butterflies and trees and everything else that I haven't named, all is well. All is well. And we can rest in that presence. And that's where Alexa, the law of mind, takes over once again. Because if we are holding the consciousness of all is well, then we start to see the visible reflection of that in the mirror called life, and all truly is well. I think that's enough for today. I have some stuff that I was going to say, but I'm going to save it for next week because it's really cool. So I'm going to invite you now just to look at your lives, to look at your lives, to see where you may be engaging in dualistic thinking, to think about where you might be, where you might be turning abundance into scarcity or perceiving only scarcity where there is really abundance, to look at where you might be experiencing prison when really there is privilege, to take that into the idea of this pandemic that we are privileged to serve here at this time, to understand that if you're doing any of those things, it is not cause for mortification of the flesh or the spirit. It is not cause for shame. It is an opportunity just to see the smudges on your window and just clean them off with a lot of love and joy and appreciation and say thank you so much for being here, because now I get to clean and I get to have an even brighter view. It is an opportunity to fall into prayer, to contemplate the facts from the highest point of view, and to recognize that all is well, and to greet our life, your life, the life of the planet, the life of all beings, with wonder, awe, and joy. Let us do that now, and let us pray.